The Power of Meditation continues with Jack Kornfield, co-founder of the Spirit Rock Meditation Center and the author of A Path with Heart, on how meditation enables us to face the reality of impermanence and learn to relax with uncertainty.
Shortly after the Buddha was enlightened, there's a story that he was walking down the road, met some people who saw him, and he was in a very happy state. He was supposed to have been quite a handsome prince before his going off to be a monk. So here's this handsome prince, now wearing golden robes and recently enlightened and obviously quite pleased. I was going to say pleased with himself. I don't know about that. But at least very happy. And very special from all accounts. So they saw him and they said, "Wow, you seem very special. What are you? Are you some kind of an angel or a deva?" He seemed unhuman. Some way. "No." "Well, are you some kind of a god then?" "No." "Well, are you some kind of a wizard or magician?" "No," he replied. "Well, are you a man?" "No," he said. "Then what are you?" And he answered, "I am awake." And in those three words, "I am awake," gave the whole teachings of what Buddhism contains. To be a Buddha is one who has awakened. Awakened to the nature of life and death and the world in which we live. Awakened to the body and mind. And so the practice of meditation from the Buddhist or other traditions is not to become a meditator or a spiritual person or a Buddhist or join something, but it's rather to understand this capacity we have as humans to awaken. Now, what is that which we can awaken to? What is the Dharma which we can awaken to? Dharma is a Sanskrit and Pali word that refers to that which is universal, to the teachings and to the laws of the universe, teachings which describe it. And the Dharma, or the laws, the way things work, are always here to be discovered. They're quite immediate. So there's a story many of you old meditators who come to these things will have heard before, of a pious man who very much believed in God. And one day, at the place where he dwelled, it started to rain heavily, and it rained, and a big flood came. And he went from his first floor to the second floor of his house, and the water rose until he was on the roof. Someone rode by and said, "Get in, my friend, I'll save you, the water's rising." He said, "No, I believe in God, I really have faith, I believe." So he sent the rowboat away. It rained more and the water got all the way up to his neck, and another boat came by picking up people. "Get in, my friend, I'll save you." "No, thank you, I have trust, I've lived my whole life, I believe in God, no need." The rowboat goes away, it gets up to his nose, just barely can breathe, and a helicopter comes over and lowers down a rope. "Come up, my friend, save you." "No, thank you, I believe, I have faith, I trust." So the helicopter goes away, it rains some more, and he drowns. He goes to heaven after that, and after not very long there, he gets an interview with God, and it's his turn. So he goes in, you know, and he sits down and pays his respects and whatever, and then he says, "You know, I just don't understand it. Here I was your faithful servant. I was so trusting and prayed and so believing, and I just don't understand what happened to me." And he sort of recounts all his circumstances. "Where were you when I needed you?" And God looks and kind of scratches his head and says, "I don't understand it either. I sent you two rowboats and a helicopter." And we wait somehow for God to come as some big flash or our spiritual awakening to be some wonderful otherworldly experience. What the Dharma is and what we can awaken to is the truth that's here when we leave our fantasies and our memories and things behind and come into the present. When we do that and we start to pay attention, we start to see some of the characteristics of the Dharma or the life in which we live. One characteristic is impermanence. Thus shall you think of this fleeting world, it says in one Buddhist sutra. A star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, an echo, a rainbow, a phantom, and a dream. That as you look, the more closely you observe, the more you realize that everything you look at is in change. Seeing changes, hearing changes, smelling, tasting, physical sensations are changing. All the experience in the body and mind, all the experience of the senses. It seems solid. That's the illusion of santati. It's like a movie. And when you watch the screen and get caught in the story, it seems like it's very real. But then you turn your attention to the projector or slow it down or focus your awareness very carefully. It's even possible to do. And you start to see that it's one frame after another, one appearing in the next, dissolving the next arising. And it's so for our life that it's really a process of change. Because that's so, because things don't last, unless you have something that lasts in your life, please raise your hand if you do. Has anyone gotten any mental states to last very long, of any kind? Someone once raised their hand and said, yes, ignorance, it's lasted my whole life. But basically it's change. You sit down here and in one day, you don't even have to be a very adept meditator to get the point that it moves all the time, that it changes. And because things don't last, if we're attached to them being a certain way, what happens? This is one of the laws. What happens? We suffer, we get disappointed. Not because you should. You can be attached as much as you like. But even though you're attached, does it stop it from changing? So you start to see the laws of things, that things are impermanent, that attachment doesn't work, and that there must be some other way. There is actually what Alan Watts called the wisdom of insecurity, the ability to flow with things, to see them as changing process. You also see not only are they impermanent and ungraspable, that there's suffering if we're attached to them, and that there's pain as well as pleasure in this world. It's part of what we were born into. If you decide to get off on this planet and get one of these things with 10 little things on the end here and 10 little things on the end there and stuff that grows for a while and that you put old dead plants and animals in and mush them up in order to get it to kind of move around. If you choose one of these things, which you have, it's too late already, what is the nature of it? It grows up, it grows old, it dies, it gets sick sometimes. Sometimes it feels good and sometimes it hurts. There's pleasure and pain in it. Anybody have one that doesn't hurt sometimes? Okay. If you want that, you got to go to another planet because it's not the way things are here. So you sit and you see, I'm just going to be with my body and mind. I'm not doing anything, no big deal. And what do you find? You find sometimes it's pleasant. And sometimes it's painful, sometimes it's quiet, sometimes it's restless. And you begin to relate to what Zorba called the whole catastrophe, all of it, instead of fearing the painful things and running away all the time and grasping after pleasant things, hoping that somehow by holding them they'll last, seeing that they don't. My teacher Ajahn Chah used to wander around the monastery at times and go up to people and just say, are you suffering much today? And depending what you'd answer, if you say yes, he said, oh, must be quite attached, and kind of giggle about it and go along. There wasn't much more to say. Okay. You see that you don't own it because it changes by itself, that you rent this house, but it's not yours to possess. And you see, in fact, that none of these things are possessable because the nature of life is non-possession. So we sit to awaken, and we awaken by coming into our bodies and our senses and starting to see the laws which govern life so we can come into a wiser relationship with it. The heart of it is mindfulness, listening, attention. Attention to our bodies, to all the various energies, to the voices Paying attention when we eat. Which voice do you listen to when you stop a meal? No, is it the belly, which maybe speaks first and says, oh, had enough, comfortable, nice and full. And then the tongue chimes in, gee, but that fruit was so good, let's have a little more. And the eyes say, yeah, and there's more of that other stuff, too, that we haven't finished yet. And you hear all these different voices. To live in the feelings, to be aware of both emotions, to be aware of the pleasant and neutral and unpleasant aspect of our experience, and learn that we don't have to resist that which is painful and grasp that which is pleasant all the time. That's perhaps our conditioning, but in fact, it doesn't lead to peace. It doesn't lead to happiness. Because things change anyway. Even if you're attached to them, they change. It's an open-hearted and non-judging awareness which comes into the body and into the feelings and then observes the mind as well and its laws. The laws of karma, the laws of impermanence, and begins to see how to relate to it all out of compassion or kindness and wisdom, which means seeing how it's really operating.